Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. John, there was no shortage of things to do in Tucson this weekend. Thousands turned out for the book festival. There was the golf tournament. There was baseball going on. I mean, my goodness, talk about a very active late winter, early March here in Tucson, Arizona. But away we go into the really first full week of March. It's Monday, March 6, 2023. Our show, in our 13th year now with the radio program in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, 1030 KVOI, The Voice. For trusted news and talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line, where we do our telephone interviews, that is sponsored by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday one-on-one, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services, and hanging systems. That means that Moe will gladly come out to your home, make sure all of the things that have been framed by he and his great team get up on the wall the way you want them. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. This week's Monday one-on-one, joining us Sharon McDonough, director of Tucson's historically troubled public safety communications department, the office that houses the city's 911 call center. Sharon was appointed to head the office in March of 2022. She spent more than three decades working for the city, having first started her career in 1990 as an EMT for the Tucson Fire Department. Actually, she was one of the first female officers in the fire department with EMT. Sharon, great to see you again.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
In those days, 1990, it was rare for a woman to be in the fire service, wasn't it?
It was, yes. I was the third woman on the Tucson Fire Department, and then later the first female chief officer.
What was it about wanting to join when you were a little girl? Did you, was there something about firefighting that looked attractive to you? I mean, did you play like, you know, kids play cops and robbers and cowboys and Indians? What were you playing? To be a firefighter?
No. Well, firefighter was the greatest piece of the job, so you're hired on as a firefighter and an EMT. But I always wanted to be in the medical field, helping people. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't envision myself going to school for, you know, 18 more years to be a really great doctor. And I love that every day is something new and different. And I'd see these guys working out at my gym and asked them about the service and joined. And my gosh, I absolutely loved my career.
I'm curious, and I think our listeners would be as well, what is the training to become an EMT?
Well, EMT, so it's a combined academy. Everybody comes in to be trained as an EMT and a firefighter. So that training is about 22 weeks long. You touch everything. We do all of the medical training, of course, recognizing cardiology and injuries and trauma and how to manage sick people. And then you have the whole piece about how to fight fires, how to manage hazardous materials, trench rescues, wildland firefighting. It runs the gamut. Every emergency that you think it could happen, we get trained to manage.
And that's 22 weeks training?
22 weeks. It's grueling, it's difficult, and it's fun as heck.
And then you learn, of course, after the 22 weeks, you're learning a lot probably in that first year for sure.
Absolutely. You're still on probation when you get out, and you spend another year being trained out in the field. And in fact, the Tucson Fire Department's accepting applications right now.
Are they?
Great job.
Mm-hmm. All right. And you are accepting applications where you are currently working, heading up the 911 center. Let's talk a little bit about that. When you took over, I think Chief Kasmar, you joined Chief and kind of looking at the situation, and I think Chief said, or maybe you said it, this is a system that's on life support.
Yes.
And
yes.
So in this period, a year and a half or so, first of all, the system, as I said in the introduction, was troubled. What do you see that stemming from, Sharon?
You know, I think one of their biggest issues was they performed a consolidation that didn't have good foundational pieces to it. And then they suffered through a changing of the guard. They had multiple leadership teams in a very short period of time. And each leadership team kind of came in with their own flavor, their own style. And nobody could really get their feet underneath them about what is this team? Is it a team? Is it really just a bunch of silos operating out of the same building? And how do I make a difference and how do I fit in?
When you then you looked at the situation and morale was not good, so you're really building almost from the ground up, looking for foundations. What were some of the foundations that you felt would be some building blocks to make this, to make the repairs?
Well, our big goal, mine and my leadership team's big goal, has been to move from survivorship to thriving. From mm-hmm. surviving to thriving, and how do we get there? And such a big piece was the culture. People felt locked in. They felt hopeless. They felt unheard. They had had their ability to even take a vacation taken away from them based on staffing and previous leadership. They had to wear uniforms that made no logical sense. They had
kind of chair chained to a chair,
right? And they had it. You know, their personal cell phones couldn't be with them. All the things that make life a little comfortable, that mm-hmm. recognize that people are human beings with human needs, were stripped from them. So we wanted to start there. Let's make this a really livable place to work, make it pleasant. And then we wanted to look at opportunities. Like, we didn't want people in dead-end jobs. We want them to feel like they have a potential career. And we really focused on career paths. We took some surveys from them and asked, you know, what's going on here? And so much of it was related to training. So we had to take a really drastic step in how we revamped the training and how we looked at it, how we considered it. And then, of course, you know, we go and we address those people who are just making life unpleasant for those around them. Most of the time when we talk to them, they just had this hurt underneath that needed to be heard and satisfied. We did lose a couple people through that process because that's hard. You sometimes have people that just, you know, won't be happy in our center and maybe it wasn't the right job for them.
And they're angry.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I would have been too. Mm-hmm. And that's how we really looked at it. So we really pushed the idea that said, if we care about our people, they will then care about taking good care of the people that call in. We just needed to meet their needs as human beings.
911 is a clearinghouse, in effect, for people that call. They're not going to call unless they want some type of service performed.
Right.
It might not be medical.
Right.
They may be calling and saying, there's some homeless people. This situation needs to be addressed. You are a clearinghouse for people that have concerns.
That's correct. And, you know, and we're there 24/7. We're reasonably nice when they call. We answer quickly, right? We don't get a phone tree. There's all these reasons why people call us. And mostly it's people don't know who else to call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our definition of what an emergency is has perhaps expanded over the years as well. What we want to begin doing is just to get really good at sending the appropriate resource to solve their need so that it's solved. It's not recalcitrant to the system.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, they call us for everything and they never call when they're having a good day.
No.
They're calling because they're having a bad day.
When you think about it, the people that you oversee and you're part of your team, these are people who are going to talk in their workday with people that are perhaps having, Sharon McDonough, the worst day of their life.
Yes. Yes, and it's hard. It's hard on our folks. We've been looking at just the long-term effects mentally and the moral injury that's caused when someone's on that other end of the line and our folks don't get to do all the things that they morally would like to do. They'd like to rush over there and hug them and save them from that situation, but their role is different. And oftentimes they don't really get to hear what happens on the other end, which is also difficult. So yeah, they're exposed to a lot of trauma, a lot of moral injury. You know, and then they marry that to some of the things in their own life because they're humans too, and that pain is great.
And you serve how many communities?
Oh gosh, well, we have the city of Tucson.
What's your footprint?
We're in the whole. We have all of all of police, Tucson Police, South Tucson Police, Tucson Fire, which is the most of the city, and then all of the outreach surrounding fire and EMS departments that we serve. We call them the Safer Sea Group in the northwest side of town.
All right. When we continue with Sharon McDonough on our Monday one-on-one, we're going to talk about a national initiative that the city of Tucson and Sharon are very much involved with. It's called Transform 911, and we'll dig a little deep into that. But right now, I want to tell our listeners about my favorite bakery in town, Sharon. It's Mona's Danish Bakery. You're always up for bakery goods, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Mona's is home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. My goodness, who isn't up for some comfort food these days? I know I am, and I was up at Mona's over the weekend and rediscovered their chocolate chip muffin that we really had a great muffin up at Mona's, and we had breakfast up there yesterday. Their website, to be further tempted, beautiful pictures of everything on the menu at monasdanishbakery.com. Their hours, Tuesday through Saturday. They open at 6:30. They're open Sunday at 7. They are closed today. They deserve a day off because they had a very busy weekend for sure. My advice, get there very early. As soon as the doors open, preferably, you'll have the best selection. We'll continue. It's the Monday one-on-one presented by our friends at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. More with Sharon McDonough right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back on this Monday afternoon. Bill Buckmaster with you. It's the Monday One-on-One presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. We're talking about something so important to every citizen of Pima County and Tucson, and that is when people have a problem and they're going to have to call 911 and they want service and they want a resolution, hopefully, to their problem. Sharon McDonough is here, and Sharon has, for over a year now, been taking on a huge responsibility in trying to right the ship, if you will, at the 911 center. Sharon, I teased before the break talking about this Transform 911 effort. What is this initiative about, and what is the City of Tucson's role in it?
So the Transform 911 was a product of Chicago University as they began to examine...
My hometown.
Yeah, same, same. Right. That's where I'm from. Where they begin to examine just a different view and look at 911. It was part of their policing project, and it was initiated following the death of George Floyd. So that's the nexus of it. And what the thought process was how do we make that happen less? Mm-hmm. And we talked about how getting the right resource there, it starts it off in a just a better way, right? So we, City of Tucson, myself, the mayor, city manager, Mr. Chad Kazmar, the police chief, Chuck Ryan from Fire, and
Fire Chief Ryan,
and Sarah Lanius with the Community Safety, Health, and Wellness Program took a trip to discuss more of this up in New Orleans last summer, and to really start digging into the things that need to happen in the 911 system to improve response and resourcing. So the program itself, the Transform 911 program, has seven main areas of interest, and the first is reintroducing 911. What is it really there for? And what are some of the other possibilities about it? Next is putting the people in it. Like, what is our public demanding, and what do they want from 911? Is it different than it used to be? And it is. The next was advancing the workforce, and we've done a whole bunch of work on this, which is
to
recognize.
We talked about that in our first segment, talking about how to improve the workforce.
Yeah, recognizing that our people are so integral to the system. The fourth is the making 911 and be seen as an independent public safety partner, not just a sidebar for the police department or the fire department, but an independent, critical piece in getting the right resources to the scene. The fifth initiative in that program is ensuring the right response at the right time. We're talking about alternative response options based on data, and data is the sixth initiative, strengthening the data and the tech standards. And then seventh, securing national level support for 911. So there's lots of support out there for police, for fire, at the national level, simply because it's well known. And again, because we were always kind of seated as part of the police department or the fire department, nobody really looked at the individual needs of the people that work there. Mm-hmm. They were focused on the people out in the field. So those are the main initiatives. We're taking part in all the pieces. We convene about every quarter, and sometimes another special interest meeting will pop up for us to discuss. We just, in fact, had one last week where we were talking about different technology build-outs that would allow us to dispatch alternative resources besides police and fire.
There is this effort about 311. What is that, Sharon?
So 311 provides an alternative for an emergency. Someone's got an urgent issue, but it's not an emergency life-threatening issue. Right now, they just call 911 for that, and it clogs up the system. And we're not able to spend a long time with them on the phone because we have another queue sitting there waiting for someone to answer. So we really just rather quickly, this is an emergency, please.
You hand it off as quickly as possible.
But we don't hand it off to anything meaningful, and that's the problem. Mm-hmm. So now this will give us an option to hand it off to someone meaningful that says, hey, I've got this pothole. It's filling with water. I'm going to hand you over to 311. And they're going to take a deeper dive on what you've got going on, gather some information from you, and then later you can get, you know, updated on it. We are planning to go live with that in the fall, and we believe that by getting the non-emergency calls out of the 911 system, the 911 system will become more efficient and more quick, and we'll be able to really separate those two out a little bit more meaningfully.
Because the emergency piece of it is what, maybe one in four calls that really need an emergency?
Yeah, there's been different numbers bounced around, and I know fire and police have different experiences. And what we do know is that none of us has a really great picture of what that is. But we do believe it's a significant number of calls that come in that are not truly an emergent need for police or fire.
Now, the mental health component, and this goes along with this homeless coalition effort that's going on that you're involved with.
So the mental health component, there's two pieces. One, we are the one of the first call centers in the country to embed crisis call takers within our center. So if someone calls today and depicts to us a generalized or a
suicide threat,
those things, instead of sending police or fire, we give them to a crisis call taker who's sitting there in the center, who's highly trained and able to provide support. To date, we hand off about 1,200 calls a month to our crisis providers.
So this is up and running now.
This is. We've had it there for a couple of years, and we've expanded it. There's a lot of national attention to it because it's working. The good part is we then connect them to a provider who stays in touch with them and connects them to the behavioral health resources or rehabilitation resources that they might need, and they check in on with them on a regular basis. So it's not just a Band-Aid fix. It's a real fix.
Now, someone calls about a homeless, what they see some home, an encampment, or perhaps there's someone that they feel a homeless person is in distress. How does that now fit into this?
So there's two things. There's a little nuance you mentioned there.
Yes.
If they're in distress, police or fire get dispatched,
right?
Depending on the need.
Okay.
If they're not, and they're just reporting, you know, something unsightly or behavior that they don't like, the city of Tucson, in partnership with the county and under the guidance of Mr. Ortega, our city manager, we have a huge coalition put together to really examine the root cause issues, find them resources, and clean up those encampments. So there's a huge team working on true resolution. And by that, I don't mean we just want to move them to another area where we can't see them. What we want to do is solve their problem and get help to the people that need it, providing low barrier housing and getting connected to employment opportunities, rehab services, whatever those pieces are.
Because some communities have taken that approach, just kind of move the people to a different area. That's the old kicking the can down the road.
Absolutely.
You're not going to solve the problem by moving them. And you're not going to get to the root issues, are you?
Right, you're not.
And we now have a homeless coalition head. We hope to have her on the program and on one of our Monday one-on-ones. So she's kind of overseeing this whole effort, the coalition.
She's coordinating all the efforts, and every city department is represented in those meetings, multiple county departments as well. And she's kind of just, you know, herding the cat, so to speak, and getting us coordinated in our efforts.
What advice would you have for our listeners about what is considered, and I know this is kind of a root question, what is considered a 911 emergency?
Life-threatening needs. Whether, you know, I'm going to die because of an illness or an injury, or I'm going to be killed because there's a bad guy. Those are true life-threatening emergencies. There are other lower-level emergencies. For example, if you fell and you broke your leg, you still need someone to come help you.
Yes.
But you're not going to die from that, right? Depending on the fracture, of course. But there's different tiers that are still suitable for the emergency system. But we know we have a huge batch of, you know what, yeah, there's somebody that's just, my neighbor's irritating, you know. That's not an emergency.
Are the neighbor's making a lot of noise?
Yeah.
It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. What do I do?
Right. But there's a need for some level of resolution. So we want to become kind of a place that has a deeper menu of options, of resources to solve problems without overtaxing our partners in the police department and our partners in the fire department.
Are you and the team hiring right now, and who might be a qualified individual?
Well, qualified individual, we need someone who has a really minimized or zero criminal background history.
There is a criminal background check.
There is, because, you know, you're exposed to a lot of really deep information.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a high school graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. And then we share with you the fact that, you know, we work 24/7, and that's not for everybody. There's mm-hmm. nighttime shifts, there's daytime shifts. And the ability to look at nine computer screens and listen to a caller and be typing.
Multitasking, I think,
multitasking
has to be up there.
Really at the top of the list.
What should folks do? Is there a place to go to find out more?
Sure. You could go to the City of Tucson's website and click on the Public Safety Communications Department, and it'll take you to a link that shows you some of the job opportunities.
And you will train people.
We will train people, and they get paid while they're getting trained.
There you go.
Yep.
All right, Sharon McDonough, our Monday one-on-one guest, director of Tucson's 911 system. Thank you, Sharon. Good to see you again.
Thank you for having me.
All right, our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe and the team, they're so great. They love good conversation. That's why they're one of our wonderful sponsors. They believe in community dialogue. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. We'll take a break right here. More on the Buckmaster Radio Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for Marketplace Trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Oh,
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. It looks like we've got some really nice weather coming up. So as we get closer to the official start of spring, we have had, there's no two ways about it. It's been a very unusually cool and wet winter season. So the people over at Green Things now are ready for you as you begin thinking about, and I know we were thinking about it over the weekend, what are we going to plant for the springtime? And Green Things, our go-to nursery, 13-acre site, 3384 East River Road. Their website's greenthingsaz.com. They are in their 53rd year of business in serving Southern Arizona. Their sister business is zocalovillage.com. Some wonderful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Some of the Talavera pottery that they have there. Just really beautiful items, outstanding pieces. Let's welcome now, usually the first Monday of the month, the Buckmaster Show Border Report with Keith Rosenblum, journalist, consultant, author, former border reporter for the Arizona Daily Star and for the Arizona Republic, former congressman, former aide to Congressman the late Jim Colby. Welcoming on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, here he is, Keith Rosenblum. Keith, how are you, sir?
Bill, in that description of me, you sucked up all my time. You have me as you went into so much of my career.
Yeah.
That I'm number one, I'm honored, but number two, I have no time left to expound on anything.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let's get right at it. President Lopez Obrador, there were some demonstrations. Demonstrators say that the electoral law changes that were approved in the last couple of weeks are threatening democracy. What's at stake here, Keith Rosenblum?
I agree with those people who say that democracy is at stake. President Lopez Obrador, for many of the positive things he has done, and I want to say that I'm one of those people that believe that although I loathe them and wish that he was never my president, I also believe that there's some positive things that Donald Trump did. So in that context, President Lopez Obrador has done some very positive things. Right now, the peso is the pillar of stability in the financial world. Mexico just got it. Landed the Tesla plant in Monterey. There's lots of very great things that are going on in Mexico today, so I'm an optimist on that. Also, the president does not believe in separation of powers. The president really does. He really does deeply want to be the emperor of Mexico, and he has done whatever he can to weaken the other two branches. He's done his best to weaken the legislative branch. Continues to do what he can to weaken the judicial branch. And so count me among those people that believe that everything Lopez Obrador does right now is to consolidate power in his hands, to be disrespectful, and I say that in all the terms of the definition of the term, of the judiciary. He believes that he has a mandate and that that really exceeds what anyone in the legislature gets to do and what anyone in the judiciary gets to do. And so his first effort was to simply get rid of the electoral commission altogether. It's called the INE. It used to be the IFE, or in reverse. Anyway, that's the Instituto Nacional Electoral. And Mexico to this day has elections that are essentially unquestionable. They are unimpeachable. The INE, it's an expensive system, but they have made sure that elections today in Mexico at the local level, at the national, county, state level, and national level are beyond reproach. That's very important for a country that for many years had a reputation for being the most unreliable and where everything was negotiated. So what he's proposed would what he tried to do first and did not have the support of his Congress was to simply to disable entirely the Electoral Commission, which you can't do. it would be like undoing entities in the U.S. that are autonomous. So not going to happen. And then he tried legislatively with a number, what I think would have required just a simple majority, to weaken the Electoral Commission as well. Fortunately, that also has been, it looks very unlikely, but trust me on this one, Bill, and I don't normally tell you trust me on anything, but I can tell you that López Obrador is doing his best to neutralize, if not vanquish, the National Electoral Commission. And so far, the Mexicans have held firm in saying, no, you're not going to do that to us. He represents it as being a big savings of money and it won't affect the integrity of the elections. That's bogus. It will absolutely affect the integrity of the elections.
He got out there were he actually got out there and was yelling back at the demonstrators, wasn't he?
I don't, that part I don't know about. He is a fighter every day. Again, today, not that you care, not that your audience cares, today was press conference number 1,068.
Every day, right? Every business.
Well, not Saturday and Sunday. He does give press conferences then, but they're not a part of the formal scenario. And more, and then again, today was, I think, went for 2.5 hours. They are both the most informative things you could ever expect, as well as they are freak shows with reporters that are not really reporters. The reporters themselves are like, it's the bar scene in Star Wars, for those of you who have watched Star Wars. It's a freak show. And so you learn a tremendous amount. That's why Keith Rosenblum feels like he needs to be paying attention, even though while I'm listening to him, I can probably, you know, write poetry, go for a walk, pet the dog. There's parcels of it or nuggets of a López Obrador press conference that you have to pay attention to, no matter what. And the problem is, they don't come at the onset of the press conference. They can come in hour two or hour three, just in an aside where the guy says something. You say, oh, now I get it. So, for example, let me give an example, because I've been railing on this topic forever. And you've said, Keith, great points, but you sound, you know, you never give us any specifics. Okay. You sound vapid yourself. Okay. So like case in point, right now, one of the ministers of the Supreme Court, I forget her first name, but her last name is Esquivel. It has been documented in the Mexican press that the woman is a plagiarist. That is, both her undergraduate degree and her doctoral degree are filled with plagiarized material.
What?
In most societies in the world, that would lead for someone to resign. Am I wrong?
If of course.
Bill,
yeah.
A man who we all hold in the, most of us hold in the highest of esteem. I know several that don't. But anyway, that's, so anyway.
I hope not.
She is a plagiarist, and it's like certified. And in any society, she would be forced to resign. Well, because she's an ally of President López Obrador, guess what? Oh, they're making so much of it, it's not an issue, you know. So you get to see that the man is entirely blinded by loyalty. If you're loyal to him, you can do no ill. And if you're disloyal to him, even if you're like the Dalai Lama or, you know, Gandhi, then you're a bad person. He sees the world as black and white. You're with him or you're against him. It's flat out that way, which is both, it's helped him to get to where he is, but it could also be his downfall.
And this is his fourth year, isn't it already?
It is. Yeah. He has about, I think he has like 19 months to go.
I kind of like I like the Mexican system, actually, of 1 6-year term. I like that.
Well, maybe that's what you need to sit with your congressman. Is your congressman Juan Ciscomani? Or what district are you in? Maybe you should be proposing that. That's actually not a bad idea. Yeah. 6 years, no reelection.
Mm-hmm.
You get your agenda done. And this guy, you and everybody else is soon going to be able to take a fabulous train trip among the Mayan ruins in Quintana Roo and the other adjacent states, because the guy has built 1,500 kilometers of track, five different train routes to go see that part of Mexico. Mm. He pushed, by the way, he's always been pushing development in the south of Mexico. He tried and tried to get Tesla to look at southern Mexico, and Tesla said, no way, we're going to be in the north where we're close to the United States, close to our plant, our existing plant in Austin, and so don't mess with us. And in the end, López Obrador lost a little bit of face because he had said they're not going to do it, they don't have the water supplies to do it, and in the end, he totally backed down. and by saying then that Tesla is going to help out with the water situation, you know, in the state of Nuevo León. But he pushed for development in the south, and with the train, anyway, has achieved it. He also got a brewery in that was contemplated for Mexicali area, you know, in Baja. That was sent to the south of Mexico. So he's achieved his goal. He's been at odds with the private sector of northern Mexico for ages, and that's why he's tried during his presidency to route investment when he can to the south of the country.
Maybe we should take the break, but you did bring up the northern part of Mexico, and we'll, why don't we begin on this anyway for a few minutes, then we'll take a break. The FBI and the State Department says do not travel, another one of these advisories to northeastern Mexico, after there was the report of four American citizens being assaulted and kidnapped in Matamoros, Mexico.
Do you want me to respond, or do you want to do your break first?
Do the break first, and then Keith Rosenblum will respond to that bit of news.
I will be phoning my answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take a break right here. Back right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show. Monday upon us, The Buckmaster Show presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive. Great time to start planning a spring getaway. Visit their website, Southwest New Mexico. For more information, southwestnewmexico.org for more information about what to do. And there are all sorts of great recreation opportunities in the very greened up Gila National Wilderness. Great places to stay. Check it out. Only about a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. We resume now our monthly border report with Keith Rosenblum. And we mentioned before the break, Keith, that the FBI is coordinating with other federal partners and Mexican law enforcement agencies to investigate the assault and kidnapping of 4 U.S. citizens in the border community of Matamoros, Mexico. Is that Matamoros, what, the northeastern kind of corner of Mexico?
Yeah, it's over in Tamaulipas.
Tamaulipas.
Is it Tamaulipas? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Bill, once more, this brings out my my journalistic desire to know more. In other words, the idea that 4 Americans were kidnapped and vanished somewhere is not in and of itself cause for me to freak. And here's why. A lot of Mexican Americans have dual nationality. They're Mexican, they're U.S. A lot of the drug trafficking, a lot of the people trafficking, a lot of the arms trafficking that takes place between both countries is done by American citizens. So as the mere fact that those are 4 American citizens that have gone missing, I'm not going to be riveted or concerned about it right away. First, let's find out if this was Bill Buckmaster's relatives from Poughkeepsie who were crossed over the border for dental treatment and got whisked away,
yeah,
or whether these are people who are leaders in helping to smuggle arms into Mexico. We don't know yet. And so and I don't really care that State Department has decided to declare this kind of advisory also is irrelevant to me. I have enough distrust in state and enough distrust of CBP and my own federal agencies having lived it. Now, this is not a distrust word based on just hunches. This is a distrust based on very real experience that Keith Rosenblum has had as a reporter personally, as well as learned. So no, I'm not, this conversation we can have, or I'll let you know later today, at some point, whether this is something that we should be alarmed about. But at the same time, as 4 Americans are going vanishing in Matamoros, hundreds of Americans are going to be moving to the Monterey area to start a business with Tesla, and mm-hmm. plenty of Mexican Americans will be going down there to do very noble work. So the idea that, some isolated incident in Matamoros, okay, let's see. I don't know.
It is interesting that this gets the headlines, of course, and you talking about the Tesla factory. I don't know about some of our listeners, but this is the first. I know John, my engineer producer, he's saying he hadn't heard about it. I hadn't heard about it, but it is interesting, and we've both had long journalist careers. You know what captures the headlines. There you go.
And I'm guilty as well. I'm guilty because I helped write the stories also that captured those headlines.
Yes.
Although
yes.
I begged editors to say that disappearance is not on the same scale as investment. But you don't know. I could end up reversing myself here and saying, when we know more about those 4 Americans, saying, "Oh, that really is cause for worry." They were or appear to be an entirely innocent group. Let's panic and let's do have these advisories. However, given what we know right now, we have no business declaring an advisory, nor do we have a business panicking, nor flattering Mexico. We don't know.
Let me ask you. I'm curious, Keith Rosenblum, does the Mexican government issue travel advisories? I mean, when there are murders in, say, Chicago over a weekend, we may have 14, 15 people killed in a weekend in Cook County. Does the Mexican government say don't travel to Illinois?
Of course not. It's a gimmick. With the U.S., we use our best PR and we use our best little travel advisories and travel warnings and travel, and most of us ignore it. Most of us, the good news is that our State Department advisories don't make it to half of us anyway. So, of course, now, if the Mexicans did, if other countries did, we would be up in, you know, we would be in a rage. Like, oh, like, really? You're going to take a mass shooting or the danger in Chicago or something else like that, and you're going to use one incident in a country of 360 million people to somehow isolate and to spook other people? Like, it's absurd, except for we do it. And we take advantage of a nation, I would call it an island mentality, where look at what those people are doing to us. And you need look no farther than Donald Trump's creation of a department within the State Department called the Department of whatever is crimes against U.S. citizens committed by undocumented foreign nationals. Can anyone say xenophobic conduct and taking advantage of a population that is so ready to give away our rights and so ready to become, we just love being spooked, just like campfire stories.
This level 4 warning, which is a do not travel advisory, those are up for, if someone cares to check, those are up for so many places in Mexico.
Yeah, well, have your listenership chime in, and I will tell you that 95% of them are bogus, and they are irrelevant, and that there's very rare for the innocent Mexican or the innocent American or innocent Canadian or innocent German to be harassed, caught in a crossfire, you name it. It is internecine. It is between families, between traffickers. You bet. There's going to be a stray bullet, a guy who's crazed and does something that, you know, help. The same thing goes on in the U.S. all the time, and we don't even make note of it. But take a foreigner, take someone who's speaking Spanish, take all the demonization that takes place. Don't worry. Manuel Noriega, hello. Does anyone remember what we did with him? Do we remember what we did with Saddam Hussein? People who are allies, and one day they're not. And so what do? We not merely take exception or, you know, critique their countries and their policies. We demonize the individuals as well, as if somehow they're a little bit less than human. And that's the way we work as a society. And it's only people, you know, who have been down these roads that realize we're being played again.
All right, Keith, before I let you go, back to Tesla. Did Sonora compete? Was that a bidding deal for which state in Mexico would get this prize with Tesla?
I think not. I mean, Sonora would be logical, and it may be logical also for now for providing components to Tesla. But as I understood it, and obviously the only people that really know this are the acquisitions and the site analysis people from Tesla. But as I understood it from the president's explanation and from the governor of Nuevo León, whose name is Samuel Garcia, Tesla wanted a facility within a day's trip, a comfortable day's travel from Austin.
Oh,
and so Monterey was always the leading candidate. And for lots of other reasons, when you're going to do a million cars, I mean, the numbers are amazing. A million cars. How many
automotive
plants in the world to do a million cars annually? A $5 billion
That's
investment.
That's huge. I mean, huge.
So
wow.
What happens is at this point, locating that plant a mile south of Monterey or a mile where that comes down to the sticker price when you go, and I know you have several in the family. Teslas.
No.
That reflects in the sticker price. So you wanted everything, I'm sure, was well thought out. I don't think that anybody competed at all, really, because the site people from Tesla said, we're doing a million cars per year. Every inch, every peso in the minimum wage or whatever we're going to be paying people, every drop of water is going to make a difference in that sticker price.
All right. Keith Rosenblum, have a great day. Thanks, Keith.
My pleasure.
All right. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Keith Rosenblum and John Engineering Producing, Bill Buckmaster saying, have a great day.